We are in Leviticus chapter 25. We're going to start in verse 32 in a moment, which is all about the sabbatical cycle and the rules that go along with that. The sabbatical cycle was basically this. Starting from the first planting, when the Israelites go into the promised land, they are going to be counting their years of work in this fashion. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 years of work, followed by a seventh year of rest for the land. They can use the volunteer crop in that seventh year on a day-by-day basis. That's it. Then they start up again the following year and start planting again. That would be the first year of the next cycle. And they just keep doing this over and over again until they've counted off 7 of those cycles. And that would be the 49th year of the cycle, which would be a sabbatical year, a year off. And then as the next year starts, which will be the 50th year on this count, and the first year on the next count. So you kind of got this overlapping where you've got two designations for this same year. That 50th year is going to be a year of Jubilee, a year of the blowing of trumpets on Yom Kippur. And all land leases end at the beginning of the 50th year, meaning that all of the crops that have been raised by people other than the actual heirs to the property, all those crops are supposed to be paid for to the original heirs until the 50th year comes around, and then it goes back to whoever's in line to be in charge of it. And then it'll be up to them as to whether they work the land themselves or they sell that right to someone else in sort of a lease arrangement. The property belongs to God. It is put by Him into the hands of the different tribal groups according to their inheritance. And any crops that are grown by other people are paid for on a lease arrangement, always based on the 49th and 50th year, the year of Jubilee. The thing that we finished with yesterday is that this only applies to agricultural land. Property inside of walled cities, it can be leased for a single year period if it is not brought back under the control of the original owner within that year period. Then it is a permanent sale that has taken place. And at the Jubilee, this property does not revert back to the family line. It's gone. Agricultural residences, we're talking about villages that have no walls around them. Those are counted as agricultural land, and therefore the rule of the Jubilee applies. That property was either designated at the time that Israel went into the land, or it's been built on property since that time, that was designated at that time, then that sort of agricultural land property always reverts back to the inheritance line in the 50th year. And any type of redemption of it is based on the number of years remaining until the time of the Jubilee year. Now, the Levites have a different arrangement, and so they come up next in the exception portion of this story. We haven't fully talked about this yet. It will come up later. The Levites do not have their own tribal area when they go into the Promised Land. Instead, they will be given specified cities inside of the tribal territory of the other tribal groups. And these will be known as Levitical cities. They will also have properties agricultural properties surrounding those Levitical cities that will be designated as theirs. So the Levite tribe properties are actually scattered all over the land of Israel. And their way of dealing with the Jubilee year is this. Verse 32. As for cities of the Levites have a permanent right of redemption for the houses of the cities which are their possession. So even though we just read that properties inside of walled cities don't revert in Jubilee year cities, this says except for Levitical cities, because that is their property that God gave them. And so they will always revert in the Jubilee year to the family line that originally possessed that particular house inside the walled city of the Levites. Verse 33, what therefore belongs to the Levites may be redeemed, and a house sale in the city of this possession reverts in the Jubilee. For the houses of the cities of the Levites are their possession among the sons of Israel. Pasture fields of their cities shall not be sold, for this is their perpetual possession. So apparently there was a prohibition for the Levites to lease out their fields. They actually had to work them or pay someone else to work them on their behalf. They could not lease their Levitical agricultural lands to anyone else, because that's what's meant here by being sold, because you're selling the ability to grow a crop. You're not selling the actual land itself, because it's not yours to sell. It belongs to God. Next thing we have to talk about, and that is, what if you've got people that get in trouble financially within the nation of Israel? Verse 35, now, in case a countryman of yours becomes poor and his means with regard to you falter, then you are to sustain him like a stranger or a sojourner that he may live with you. Do not take usurious interest from him, but revere your God that your countryman may live with you. You shall not give him your silver at interest, nor your food for gain. I am he who is your God, who brought you out of the land of Egypt to give you the land of Canaan and to be your God. So this is basically, don't be a predator. When you see a fellow Israeli fall on hard times, don't use that as your opportunity to make money off of his misery. So if you want to help him out, then help him out. But don't tell him you're going to charge him to help him out. You can give him money to help him get out of debt, but you can't say, and by the way, you got to pay that back with 10% interest. Because that would be taking advantage of a man in his desperation, in his difficulty. And as a fellow Israeli, you are not supposed to look at it that way. You are supposed to be looking at this as family that's in trouble. And I would suggest to you that the same must be true within the churches, that we can't take advantage of fellow believers that fall on hard times by offering them loans that we can then take interest from. We need to do as Jesus teaches, and that is give without expecting a return. We need to help our brothers and sisters out if it's within our capability of doing so. Verse 39. If a countryman of yours becomes so poor with regard to you that he sells himself to you, you shall not subject him to a slave's service. Now remember, we've talked about the slavery in Old Testament times, in the ancient time periods, being one of indebtedness. So you get yourself in so much trouble that you've basically gotten rid of all your physical properties, and yet you're still in trouble financially. So the only thing you have left is your own service. So you sell your future work as a slave to someone that you owe money to. Well, God, through Moses, tells the Israelis, don't take advantage of that either. You need to treat him like an employee. That's verse 40. He shall be with you as a hired man, as if he were a sojourner. He shall serve you with you until the year of Jubilee. He shall then go out from you, he and his sons with him, and shall go back to his family, that he may return to the property of his forefathers. Now, the reason that the Jubilee is mentioned here is because of the property connection. The reality is that all Israeli servants, all Israeli slaves, indebtedness slaves, were freed from that in the seventh year of every cycle. But the Jubilee connection here is that guy has basically lost his property and his freedom at the same time. And so when the Jubilee comes around, not only have you freed him from the debt that he owed you for that last six-year period that he worked, but you've also returned the land to him that he probably sold to you as an attempt to try to get himself out of debt. And that didn't even work. He still had to sell himself as a slave. So he gets everything back. He's got his freedom in the seventh year, and he's got his property back in the Jubilee year. Verse 42, for they are my servants whom I brought out from the land of Egypt. They are not to be sold in a slave sale. So you can't just sell them off to some foreigner. This will be made very clear later. Israelis were to never, ever, under any circumstances, let other Israelis be sold to foreigners. Because under that system, they might be kept for a lot longer than 6 years. And you weren't also supposed to let them have to sell their property to a foreigner, because a foreigner might not feel that he has to return it when the Jubilee comes around. So Israelis were supposed to look out for Israelis, just as I would suggest Christians need to be looking out for Christians when it comes to these matters. Verse 43, you shall not rule over him with severity, but are to revere your God. So keep in mind, he is your brother. He is, or she is your sister in Israel, or if we're talking about the New Testament period, in Christ. And so you're not supposed to treat them as if there's some sort of piece of junk that you can just use up and throw away. That's not the way it's supposed to be done. Verse 44, as for your male and female slaves whom you may have, you may acquire male and female slaves from the pagan nations that are around you. Then too, it is out of the sons of the sojourners who lives as aliens among you that you may gain acquisition, and out of their families who are with you, whom they will have produced in your land, they also may become your possessions. You may even bequeath them to your sons after you to receive as a possession. You can use them as permanent slaves. So this is a contrast that's being made here, is that you can buy up slave contracts from non-Israelis, and you can not follow the rules of the sabbatic year release because those guys are not Israelis. But the highlight here is the next line in verse 46. But in respect to your countrymen, the sons of Israel, you shall not rule with severity over one another. Now, I'm going to be quite honest with you. I think the more religious Israelis were likely to treat their non-Israeli slaves according to the law of redemption as well. But that's just my opinion, just my feel for the way that it would work, because They would kind of have that golden rule mind, which is you will do unto others as you would have them do unto you. But there is not a legal requirement given to them that they had to do that. Just a reminder that Israelis always got released in the seventh year, and they always got their property back in the Jubilee year. Verse number 47. Now, if the means of a stranger or of a sojourner with you become sufficient, and a countryman of yours becomes so poor with regard to him as to sell himself to a stranger who is sojourning with you, or to the descendants of a stranger's family, then he shall have redemption right after he's been sold. One of his brothers may redeem him, or his uncle's son may redeem him, or one of his blood relatives from his family may redeem him, or if he prospers, he may redeem himself. So now we find out that anyone living inside the boundaries of the land of Israel still has to follow the rules of redemption. So if you're like a Gentile, let's suppose you're a Greek living in Israel during the time that we're talking about here, and you buy up the indebtedness contract of an Israeli, then you can't just keep him as a permanent slave. You have to always offer the ability for him to be redeemed by another Israeli. And you'll also have to keep the seventh year release contract rule. The calculation is given next for redemption. Verse 50, he then with his purchaser shall calculate from the year when he sold himself to him up to the year of Jubilee, and the price of his sale shall correspond to the number of years. It is like the days of a hired man that he shall be with him. Now, again, we bring in the idea of the Jubilee because there may be land involved here as well. So the land is probably the first thing that gets sold because it's real value. It's the ability to grow crops that you're selling to this foreigner. But if it turns out that your debt is bigger than the number of crops that he can get out of that property until the Jubilee, then you might end up selling yourself to him as a hired hand. So the rule, though, is it's always limited by the Jubilee. Verse 51, if there were still many years, he shall refine part of his purchase, price of proportion to him for his own redemption. So just always keep in mind the value is based on the work that can be done during a specific period of time up to the time of redemption of the property. And so everything's supposed to be fair. If few years remain until the year of Jubilee, he shall so calculate with him if the proportion to his years, he's to refund the amount for his redemption. Like a man hired year by year, he shall be with him. He shall not rule over him with severity in your sight. Meaning, you, as Israelis, they were supposed to keep an eye on foreigners that might be working an Israeli as a slave, and make sure that he doesn't get abusive of him, because the Israelis were not supposed to be abusive of slaves. So anyone living inside your boundaries needs to live by the same standard. Verse number 54. Even if he is not redeemed by these means, he shall still go out in the year of Jubilee, he and his sons with him. For the sons of Israel are my servants. They are my servants whom I brought up from the land of Egypt. I am he who is your God. So year of release in the seventh year of the cycle, but also the year of Jubilee, particularly for the land that comes up in the 50th year of the cycle. That is always the limiting factor for this idea of indebtedness among the Israelis. Well, we'll have some more to say about those sorts of things later, especially when we get to the book of Deuteronomy. But let's talk about the blessings that the Israelis were offered if they would just do things God's way in this covenant. Leviticus 26, verse 1. You shall not make for yourselves idols. You shall not set up for yourselves an image or a sacred pillar, nor shall you place a figured stone on your land to bow down to it, for I am he who is your God. So no idol worship. Remember, the Ten Commandments start with, you will have no other gods in front of me, and you will not make graven images to worship them. So God starts off this section by reminding them, you have an obligation to not be making images of other gods and goddesses to worship them. Verse 2, you shall keep my Sabbaths. And so that would be the weekly Sabbath they're supposed to protect for everyone. The monthly Sabbath, the first day of the month, is supposed to be a day off. You've got the special holidays in association with different festivals. Those are supposed to be Sabbaths as well. The kickoff day and the wrap-up day. So, supposed to keep all those special holidays and reverence my sanctuary, that is the tabernacle at this time. I am he who is. If you walk in my statutes, and walk is the Hebrew idiom for living, and keep my commandments so as to carry them out, then I shall give you rains in their season, so that the land will yield its produce and the trees of the fruit or the field will bear their fruit. So you've got to have this rain cycle in Israel in order to get crops to their fullness. So God says, you keep my rules, I will make sure the land produces well. Indeed, here's just how much he promises. Indeed, your threshing will last for you until grape gathering. Now, threshing is what you do after you've gathered in the grain. And that's usually supposed to be finished, I think, by the fifth month of the year, fourth month of the year. And so he says, guess what? You're going to be keeping on harvest threshing right up until it's time to gather your grapes in. And that usually happens in the sixth month of the year. So you're going to be busy with your grain stuff right up until it's time to get busy with your grape stuff. And then grape gathering will last until sowing time. Now, sowing starts again in the eighth month. So if you start gathering your grapes in the sixth month, he says, you're going to be doing your grape gathering and putting up your vintage from those grapes all the way up until it's time to start working the ground to get ready to put your seed crop in again. And you will thus eat your food to the full and live securely in your land. So God promises them, you keep my covenant, and I will bless you in such a way that you will always have more than enough. Verse 6, I shall also grant peace in the land, so that you may lie down with no one making you tremble. I shall also eliminate harmful beasts from the land, and no sword will pass through your land. You will chase your enemies, and they will fall before you by the sword. 5 of you will chase 100, and 100 of you will chase 10,000, and your enemies will fall before you by the sword. And so I will turn toward you and make you fruitful and multiply you, and I will confirm my covenant with you. So this is the promise that God makes to the Israelis. It is conditional, though. And unfortunately, they see very few times in their history when God keeps this promise to the full, because it is conditional. You keep the covenant, and I will make sure that you've got more than enough and that nobody hassles you. I will even protect you from wild animals. Verse 10, you will eat the old supply and clear out the old because of the new. So you'll still be eating last year's harvest when this year's harvest is starting to be put up. That's the promise that God makes if you will just live by the covenant. Moreover, I will make my dwelling among you, the place where I live, and my soul will not reject you. I will walk among you and be your God, and you shall be my people. I am he who is your God, who brought you out of the land of Egypt, so that you would not be their slaves, and I broke the bars of your yoke and made you walk erect. So God lays it out. This is what I want. I want us to have a good relationship. I want us to have that relationship similar to what I had intended when I first created Adam and Eve and put them in a perfect world and said, it is very good. I want you to enjoy the fruit of the land. I want you to be safe and secure, never having to worry about somebody invading and taking all your stuff and killing you or hurting you. I don't want you to even worry about wild animals pestering you. That's what I want for you. I want to be your God, living in your midst, having you worship me and have a relationship with me. That's the ideal that God offers to them. But it is conditional. God says, if this is what you want, then this is what you've got to do. You have to be holy as I am holy. You have to walk in the covenant that I'm giving you. You have to treat people fairly. You have to have this agricultural system that I've described to you, and this idea of giving the land a rest. That's the only way you're going to experience the perfection that I'm promising. If you don't, it's a whole different story. And that's where verse 14 starts, and this is where we'll pick up tomorrow. But it says this, if you do not obey me and do not carry out all these commandments, if instead you reject my statutes, and if your soul abhors my ordinances so as to not carry out all my commandments and so break my covenant, I in turn will do this to you. Meaning, I will bring judgment instead of blessing.